There we go. All right. So welcome everybody to another episode of the Climate Action Homes podcast. And this week, our special guest is Sean Williams of Iron Phoenix Inspections based in Aurora, Colorado. And we're just going to be diving in. You know, I think home inspections is one of those parts of the home buying process that makes everybody a little bit nervous, because they don't know what's going to happen. And so I thought this would be a great opportunity to talk to somebody who does it day in and day out. And before we dive into what you do with home inspections and your business, Iron Phoenix, Sean, do you want to just start by telling us how you got into this area? Because as you and I both know, there's not a lot of Black guys. There's not a lot of women. There's a lot of white guys that are doing home inspections. And so how did you come into this area? I'm so glad. And I think we've got a woman that I'm going to be interviewing in a few weeks as well. So I think it's really cool to have different perspective, different faces and voices. So how did you get into doing home inspections?
Well, I've always been mechanically inclined. I've always worked with my hands. I was in a machinist union, and I would actually build machines, and I would do electrical components, pneumatic, lots of different plumbing. Tons of different plumbing, from, pneumatic to, fluid, also vacuum plumbing, lots of different things. So, I actually had a pretty bad injury. I ruptured my quadricep tendon, and I just decided to kind of look into something that kind of utilized my skills in a different way, where I could actually kind of have a different perspective every day, work with different people, and actually offer people something positive, empowering information. So that's something that I came across home inspections, and I looked into the certification and the education, and I never looked back.
That's pretty cool. And we want to talk about the certifications, because I didn't realize this when I got into real estate. So as a broker, as a real estate agent, we're basically practicing law or practicing real estate law. And so we have to go through training, and we have to be supervised by a managing broker. And, there's lots of steps that new people have to go through. But I think with home inspectors, not every home inspector actually goes through a certification process. So do you want to talk a little bit about that, about the certification process and what kind of certifications people can look for?
Yes. So when it comes to Colorado, we're actually not a licensing state as far as inspections are concerned. So, anybody can just say, yeah, I'll do a home inspection for you. But there are governing bodies that actually you can get certifications through. I'm an InterNACHI certified professional inspector, and there's a standards of practice that I have to adhere to stay in good standing. And those are the inspections I do. So it's really important that you always find somebody who's certified. There are other certification bodies out there, but you just want to make sure someone's operating to a standards of practice. If you were to Google Sean Williams InterNACHI, it'll actually pop up that I'm InterNACHI certified, and it'll even show you all of the education that I've taken as an inspector. So it's just kind of empowering to know that, somebody's kind of keeping tabs on people, and that they actually know what they're doing and that they adhere to a standards of practice.
And InterNACHI, I just learned this, InterNACHI. So if you're looking to Google that, and Sean is Shawn. And so what does it mean when you are certified? Like, or maybe you could just walk us through a little bit of the process. Cause I know before we got going, you were saying you have a procedure that you follow. It's not just like, oh, let me look around. So what's that procedure look like?
So when I talk about the standards of practice, there are actually things that inspectors have to look at that they may not have to look at, things that are excluded from an inspection. And, you know, a lot of inspectors will exceed the standards of practice, you know, for a client's comfort and to make sure that the home is properly inspected. But there are still exceptions, like part of the standards of practice is, you know, you don't have to get on a roof, you know, but a lot of times I do. And the thing is, even if there is a high roof that I can't get on, I do like to offer, hey, there are resources where people will come out and look at your roof for free, things of that nature, just to kind of give people peace of mind and know that everything is okay. But when you think about a standards of practice, you think about all the systems of a home that have to be inspected. And you actually want to make sure that all those boxes are checked and that, you know, anything that could be a potential defect is actually, you know, looked at and reported on properly. So that's why it's important to have those standards.
Okay. So yeah, maybe that's one area that you could explain is, what do you find are some of the areas where you're out at the home and you're like, you know what, I think this is an issue. You need to have someone else do that. Because I think that's an area of confusion that people think a home inspector is going to inspect everything. And there's some kind of specific specialty areas that are usually referred out. So what would you kind of give people an idea? What are some common things that somebody might need to bring somebody else in, or that it might be an extra thing to look at?
Well, I'll kind of put it like this. When it comes to doing a home inspection, I consider myself to be kind of like a Swiss Army knife. I am going to look in the electric panel. I am going to get on the roof. I'm going to look at your foundation. I'm going to look at the exterior siding, the plumbing, all these different areas. But if there is a deficiency in any of those areas, then I'm actually going to refer to, you know, a professional in their particular field to make an evaluation and a recommendation for correction if it is necessary. So, you know, if you have, say, aluminum wiring or something like that, you know, that's something that between the 60s and 70s, was pretty popular, but you know, now they actually have different ways of correcting that, because you know, there were problems with aluminum wiring, you know, during those time periods, and there are a number of different kinds of defects. But you know, I can't really necessarily say, hey, this is how this needs to be fixed, even if I know that there are ways to fix it, or I could, you know, I can't really suggest that. I have to defer to that professional and kind of say, hey, you know, this is a step that needs to be taken for your best interest, you know? That's probably the best way.
Mm-hmm. I know when I'm doing wellness coaching that it's similar. Well, and also for real estate, but like for wellness coaching, if somebody has a kind of mental health issue, there's a point where we say, you know what, you need to, it'd be better if you spoke to a counselor. You know, it's kind of outside of our scope of practice. And same for almost any question that people ask us about, you know, what are the interest rates going to do, or what are the prices going to do? We can't, or, you know, what exact number should I sell my house for? That's really up to that person to decide, you know, so there's things where you can be an advisor and others that you have to stay out of. I guess the one thing that I found interesting is it seems like most homes, or how often would you say that you recommend doing a sewer scope? I know when I bought homes quite a while back, that wasn't really a thing, but it seems to be a bigger deal now. So how prevalent is that, and what does that entail?
Well, it is pretty prevalent. Sewer scopes are pretty essential now to the home buying process. There are people that do pass on them because they are an additional charge inspection. And it's actually an inspection where we take a video of the sewer line. And to explain it, I guess I should say the sewer line that's attached to the home is one part, and then the sewer line that's attached to the city is another. So the sewer line that kind of runs from the home out to, you know, the city line actually is the responsibility of the homeowner. And if it's damaged, if there's, you know, root intrusion or something like that, that should actually be something to consider for correction. And sometimes people will go in and not know that they have these kind of problems, and they can end up with a costly sewer line repair. So it's really important to kind of get that checked out before you move in so that you don't have to be responsible for that.
Yeah. A friend of mine, another realtor, said that something around that happened to her where it was someone who was just kind of squeaking by to get into this house. And she recommended, and the home inspector recommended, you should really do a sewer scope. And they chose to not do it. And then a couple months later, their basement flooded due to some issue with that. And she felt pretty terrible. But, you know, so this is why it's really important for the sellers and buyers to know that this is a big deal, and needs to be addressed. So let's talk about the money. Like, what is the, I'm sure it varies per home and that kind of thing, but is there like a ballpark range that people could expect for paying for the home inspection, and who actually pays for it? Is it the buyer? Is it the seller? Is it the realtor? Like, who can you let people know how that part of it works?
Yes. So the buyer is typically the one who pays for a home inspection. And home inspection prices, they will vary. I mean, of course, the larger the square footage of a home, you know, the larger or the more the home inspection will cost. So, you know, I typically charge $330 for a home inspection up to 2,500 square feet for a single family home. And, you know, that includes a home inspection to the standards of practice. And, you know, that's a pretty reasonable competitive price. I mean, I do offer sewer scopes and radon tests. I do those inspections myself as well. But, you know, to get those three inspections, it's about $600. But the value that you get if you do have a sewer line that's $10,000 and needs to be repaired, or a radon mitigation system, which could be upwards of $1,000, or, you know, just several different deficiencies that you may find throughout a house. It's one of those things where it's not as much about cost as it is about value.
Yeah, right. I mean, especially at the prices of homes anymore, you know, to think about that $600, you know, around $600 to protect that investment and to know what it is actually that you're buying. Yeah. I mean, if you're buying a used car, you might take it to a mechanic and say, tell me what's going on with this thing. Like, am I going to need to replace the brakes? Are the struts okay? Like, you have no way of knowing, unless you're a mechanic, what would actually be involved there. So yeah, that makes sense. And I think you were saying too, Sean, that you kind of break the, when you're finding defects, finding issues, you kind of break them up into like three categories to give people a way to get their head around that whole, you know, how big of a deal is this really?
Well, I mean, the communication factor is huge for me, just because I know that people are pretty tense about the home buying process. You have so many different things to worry about. You have funding, you have appraisals. So I like to say, you know, there are three kinds of defects that you'll typically find in a home. You have things that are health and safety issues or big ticket items. As an internationally certified professional inspector, we call those material defects. Things that, you know, can be adverse to your health and safety or could cost you a lot of money. The second type of defect is something you may need a contractor to help you fix. It's probably not quite immediate, but it's something that's on your radar, you know, something that, you know, you may get fixed later. You know, in different markets, it could be a negotiation item, but that's not really where I hammer away at it. I just say it's on the radar. The third thing is the honeydew list. You know, some people might be like, well, you know, the grill for that return register right there, you know, the screws, they look kind of loose on that, or, you know, the screws on that doorknob there, you know, I don't know if I really want to play around with that. And it's like, that's going to keep you busy on the weekend. You know, those are the kind of things that it's kind of like, you know, welcome to home ownership, more or less. Right. But, you know, the honeydew list stuff, you know, some of that stuff does make it into the report, but the health and safety items and big ticket items, I like to make sure that those are prioritized and people kind of understand that, you know, we don't want to get into the weeds. We want to, you know, just kind of stay where it's at, you know, where the important items are.
Right, right. You might have 20 items, but really one or two are the most important, and you don't want those to get lost. What are some of those that you would say, Sean, like what are some examples of those top priority health and safety type issues that you find?
You know, top priority health and safety issues could be things like, you know, not only aluminum wiring, but panels that have bad reputations there, like Federal Pacific or Zensco electric panels, things like that. Also, you know, there could be things just, they could be miswired. So electrical is a big deal. Anything where you can have moisture entering the property, or that could be adverse to the foundation, horizontal cracks, things of that nature. Also, you know, you just could have things that are life safety items that kind of go by the wayside. I mean, you'd be surprised at how often, you know, people don't replace their smoke detectors or carbon monoxide detectors. It's like, you know, they could be 20, 30 years old. And, you know, those are things that, you know, should be replaced and should be paid attention to. But also things like loose ceiling fans, or, you know, stuff like that. Like I like to look for anything where safety could come into play. I mean, especially if people have small children, it's like, you know, this staircase that doesn't have a banister, it's going to go in every single report. But, you know, when I see that you have children, you know, I might say, hey, you know, this might be a little more important for you, you know, right, because we don't want your kids to fall down the stairs or something like that. So I think that you just have to take considerations for people's health and safety and kind of see what's most important.
Yeah, for sure. I was thinking about that when I moved back in with my mom after I came back from Korea, and she was saying, I was sitting there at the kitchen table and there's water dripping down the chain where the electrical wire was for the light fixture over the table. And I'm like, oh my God, Mom. And she goes, oh yeah, that happens sometimes. Like, oh gosh. But yeah, I'm sure that you find a lot of really interesting things. And maybe it is like that. Like in her case, she was just like, you know, I'm going to stay in this house as long as I can, and I'm not going to be fixing everything. You know, and that's kind of the way she rolled. But I'm sure you see a lot of interesting things when you're out there.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything from deferred maintenance to, you know, the weekend warrior homeowner specials, you know, but it's like, it's one of those things. Sometimes it works for people, and it's, you know, if it's not safe, it's just not, you know, it's not right. And that's how I kind of like to proceed with things, of course. And, you know, you can always say, hey, this could be corrected, that could be corrected. But, you know, you just want to point them in the right direction to the right professional to help them if they need it.
Right. And that's why the buyer is generally the one that is paying for the home inspection because, you know, the buyer shows up either during the inspection or towards the end and gets that report and kind of has that in confidence. They're not, you're not reporting directly to the seller what's going on, because it's more, you know, the buyer kicking the tires and wondering if this is the house for them.
However, I will say, you know, there are instances when we do want to report to the seller, because just because I'm on that side of the transaction doesn't mean I don't want them to be safe. So if I find a gas leak or something like that, it's like, hey, could you tell the seller's agent that they need to have someone fix this immediately? You know, just because, you know, they may not know that something is out of sorts, or they may not know that they need that kind of help. And it's just important that, you know, you cover all the bases and make sure everybody's safe, because if something happened to them, I would still feel terrible. Of course, I want to protect the best interests of my client and make sure that everybody is safe across the board.
Right. I think, I think what I was thinking was that, you know, a seller might be sensitive about the condition of their house. And so you have to be honest first and foremost with the buyer. But yeah, if you find health and safety issues, that needs to be discussed. Let them know immediately. Yeah, that sounds good. Okay. And then I know, I think the other question that people have is, you know, once those things have been, once that report is done, then what do you do? And a lot of that really does have to do with the deadlines that are set up in the contract, that there's an inspection objection deadline, an inspection resolution deadline. And even, you know, in this market, a lot of people are waiving the inspection or waiving the inspection objection. And me as a realtor, I counsel people not to do that. I mean, if somebody wants to, that's their thing. But yeah, there's just so many things that could go wrong, you know, to take that extra time and know what you're getting into is definitely the way to go with that. And I guess the other thing I was wanting to know about was you're also doing some stuff with, I forgot the name of the organization, but the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion board that you're a member of.
Can we talk about that
before we kind of wrap up?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the vice chair of Inclusion, Diversity, Equity, and Action at South Metro Denver Realtors Association, SMDRA for short. And you know, it's actually pretty enlightening for me. Of course, I just like to do good work with good people. And this is kind of an avenue that's not only like doing good work with good people, but it's also learning so much about, you know, people, cultures. And, you know, I guess one of the principles that I've really like come to gain over this past year is kind of the unity principle. It's like, I like to kind of feel like everybody is a lot more the same than different. So it's one of those things where we can find common ground. It's like, hey, you know, you like barbecue, I like barbecue. And, you know, your dad or your grandfather fought in World War II. My grandfather fought in World War II. So we have this common ground. Well, my grandfather came back and he didn't have the right to vote. You know what I mean? So it's like, we have an area where we are on the same ground, but we have some differences. And it's like, okay, the effect that may have had on you, how can we fix those things in the future? You know what I mean? And how can we try to make sure that everybody is kind of has some sort of equity? You know, equality is everybody having the same, but equity is like, you know, saying, hey, let's give somebody a boost who may need it a little more. You know, there are a lot of those veterans who may not have been able to use their, their VA money to buy a house, you know? So, you know, what kind of equity can we create in communities that may have been disproportionately affected by that? And I mean, I think the conversations are valuable. I think that just kind of shifting people's consciousness is valuable. And I mean, it's definitely done a lot for me. So I'm grateful for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, I think, you know, that's what I'm finding too, is that it takes a little bit of extra work to not keep getting like for, you know, referrals to all the same kind of looking people. You know, and so that's why I was really glad that Barry Overton knew about you and brought you to our attention. But yeah, I've been learning a lot about all of this too, and really seeing housing as like on the front lines of racial equity and economic justice, because it was also on the front line of creating a lot of those problems. Things like redlining and then also like understanding, I think what you were starting to talk about was when some folks came back, like my dad, when he came back from the war, he had the GI Bill and he was able to buy a house and go to college, and that a lot of the Black service members were not given that same opportunity. And, you know, that made a huge difference because I'm one of eight kids. And so to have a, you know, a dad that was able to go to school at the Colorado School of Mines and then buy a house, you can see how that really sets the foundation for generational wealth and some of those other issues. So I do think having some more conversations about what's going on is really helpful and really enlightening and empowering.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I'm you know, grateful to hear that. I mean, on my side, I have to say, you know, it's not always necessarily about wanting anything more than an opportunity to be curious and to grow, you know? And I think that if that kind of excitement can be created, you know, in places where, you know, I've come from and I have, you know, other young people that I see come from, and it's like, that's pretty much what we need. If people just cared enough to say, hey, you know, what if we had some kids and wanted to learn about the trades, or can have an opportunity to, you know, build their own community, just kind of sparking that seed of imagination, you know, and growth, because it just, it doesn't seem like it's always put there. So that's something that I really am passionate about. And it's like, I would rather create just a vibe of, you know, positivity to give people more opportunity and chances to do things than to make it seem like, you know, give me this or give me that. It's like, you know, give me an opportunity. Give me a chance to just, you know, do my very best, you know, and I'm going to do my very best, you know, so.
And what would you say, Sean, to people like maybe young people or people that are in some other industry that have never thought of doing home inspections? And yet when they hear you and go, wait a second, this is kind of a cool thing, you know, somebody who likes to talk to people, who likes to get out, go different places every day, you know, run your own business. What would you say to somebody that might be interested in exploring this as a career?
I mean, to be honest, I feel like it's one avenue of many that are great, and life's an adventure, and whatever you can find and whatever you want to do, definitely pursue it. I mean, I'm really grateful to do what I do. And you know, it really comes down to the standards, but it also comes down to the effort. You know, I mean, you got a heart for the work that you do, but you got to put the effort into it, no matter what it is. But like I said, there are lots and lots of avenues within the real estate industry,
right,
within the trades industry. I mean, home inspections is great, but I mean, I know some guys, I'm like, wow, they're doing great doing that, whatever they're doing, you know, but it takes that effort and that, you know, the heart for doing it. So, I mean, I say go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, that sounds good. Is there anything that we missed? I feel like I'm looking at my list. I think that we hit everything that we wanted to share with people.
You know, there is one thing I want to share since we are on the Climate Homes. Please forgive me if I'm butchering.
Climate Action Homes. You got it.
Climate Action Homes. So I am certified with the National Radon Proficiency Program. So I want to kind of talk about radon a little bit, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, take a minute. Yeah.
So radon is a radioactive gas that actually is a second leading cause of lung cancer. And Colorado is a high radon state. And what radon is, it's actually very scientific. It's a byproduct of uranium and radium, and then you have radon. And the decay products actually attack your lungs, you know, and I've seen situations where radon levels are really high in a home and someone may have spent a lot of time down there and they had oxygen machines all over their house because people don't really have an education on what radon is. So just being that we're here with the Climate Action Homes, I feel like radon is important. It's something that people should know about. And, you know, a few ways to alleviate it is, yeah, get a radon test, have a mitigation system, but also, you know, keep your dust levels low, keep your filter in your furnace changed, do things like that so that, you know, you have good indoor air quality. And that's an important factor to kind of eliminate and alleviate radon.
That's a good tip. And I think people might have, maybe they had a test when they sold their home or bought their home or had some experience with radon and now they're out doing something else, you know, maybe in a different home and have kind of forgotten about it. So that's a good reminder. And also what you're saying about keeping the whole airflow clean, like clean air quality, that probably does not hurt for our COVID world.
Absolutely.
You know, where we're more concerned about having filters and that kind of thing that can keep us healthy on all levels. Cool. All right. Well, that sounds great. Well, thank you so much, Sean, for hopping in with us and for answering the questions. And, you know, if anybody's watching this, you have other questions, feel free to leave them and I'll answer them or check back with Sean and we'll get those answered for you. And thank you so much, Sean, for hanging out with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm grateful to be here.
Awesome. All right. Well, stay tuned. Our next episodes, we've got a lot of cool things coming up. We've got an author who writes a genre called Protopia, which is about envisioning a possible world, not utopia, not dystopia, but a world that can work better than what we have now. We have Dara Herman coming up to talk to us about solar rebates and how to pay for solar on your home. And then also Nicole McSpirit is going to be talking about bicycling and electric vehicles and e-bikes and she's got like some great examples of how they do things in other countries compared to here that are pretty mind blowing. So I think that's going to be a good session too. All right. Thanks, Sean. Have a great evening.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Bye, everybody.